Speaking of return guys, Speedy B finds a seam. Brandon Banks has some room. Look out! Banks near the 50 to the 40. Brandon Banks down near the 20. He's going to score! Touchdown! Oh my goodness!
Gable running away from defenders down the sideline.
He's got just the quarterback to beat, and Rico Murray will score. Touchdown, Hamilton.
Here's a play action. Kolaris now with time. An open man, Tasker. He is going to score. And Hamilton is on the board.
Second and five, downfield. Quick bumper with the pick. His first as a Bearcat.
Kolaris stands in. Into the end zone. Wide open. Touchdown, Mekari Grant.
Eric Norwood again. That's four sacks in the first.
Another, shakes one, and still another! No way! Brandon Banks down the sideline! There he goes! Look out! Not again! It's a touchdown! Holy smoke! He's done it again!
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mikey, season here. Woohoo!
Yeah!
We made it. It's June. We can... It's time for the fun to begin.
Exactly. Pumped.
But it's not all fun. We got to start with some terrible news. Fresh, hot off the presses, right out of Hamilton. Eric Norwood hurt himself at home doing something. Required stitches. And he has been put on the 6-game injured list. That blows.
Yeah. I mean, add another one to the list. Just keeps growing, it seems. You know, I'm really this one stings because he had such a hot second half of the season last year, and I was expecting that to roll over into this year. You know, making sacks, making tackles, making plays, but you know, just can't seem to catch a break this training camp. I mean, just one after another after another, and Norwood's another one to the list.
Yeah. you bring up the list. Tasker, Luke Tasker. Who knows how long he's going to be out. CJ Gable, Moses Madu is out for the year. Gable, 4 weeks apparently, although he seems to think he'll be back sooner than that. Nick Grigsby is dinged up, and like who knows what's going on with him. That's, by the way, our three starting running backs. And Balky lost for the year. I'm sure there's names that I've already forgotten because there's just been so many.
Gadosh,
Watt. Holy crap. The all-stars that are sitting on the injured list for this team are – it's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, luckily we have a lot of depth on this team because if Austin didn't build the team he has right now, I mean, we'd be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, this team is very deep, so it's not too much of a concern. It just sucks because these are great players that I want to see play, you want to see play, I'm sure fans of the league want to see play. But, yeah. Oh, man, just we could use some good news. And speaking of more bad news, Drew Edwards, our buddy, my boss, just tweeted out a few minutes ago that Bakari Grant's not practicing today. So, like, maybe that's just a one-day thing and he'll still play Friday, but just – Can I please stop? Were we cursed? Have you done something? Have I done something that has brought like the wrath of the gods down upon us?
I don't know, because last year was like it seemed like the same deal. Like so many players on the injured list, it was crazy.
And the year before, I think they had more players on the active roster than any team in history. And then, like you said, last year I think they nearly matched that. Like, God, like did Ken Austin piss off Thor or something? Is like Odin exacting his revenge? Like, what the hell's going on here?
I don't know, but another big name is I'm just looking at the one game injured list is Joel Figueroa.
I completely forgot about Joel Figueroa, starting offensive tackle.
Fuck. Rico Murray.
Oh yeah. Oh Jesus, Rico Murray.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Wow. Just wow.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. Just. You know what? Let's put this behind us. Let's move on to the good stuff.
Yeah.
The preseason, 2-0, undefeated. Woohoo!
Oh, yeah.
Now, we know wins don't mean much in the preseason, but it's still nice to see the team play and get a couple W's.
Yeah, well, it's good to watch the first game on this. You're at the game.
I was at the game live and in person, and I met your father.
Yes.
Yeah, he came and introduced himself to me as "quote unquote" Mike's dad. Did not tell me his name. Just said he was Mike's dad. He was a lot older than I expected. He's a gray haired man.
Yeah.
Handsome chap. I see where you get your looks from. But yeah, that was pretty interesting. Just sitting there during warm ups, minding my own business, and this gentleman comes and taps me on the shoulder, shakes my hand, tells me he's your father.
Yeah, season tickets, I believe. So maybe you'll see him around some more.
Maybe I will.
It was a pregame, eh?
Yeah, it was probably 45 minutes to an hour before the game started. I got down to the stadium ludicrously early because for some reason I thought the game started at 7 when it started at 7:30. So we were probably, me and the group of people I go with, were probably inside the stadium, I would guess, before 6:30. Which is abnormally early for us, but that was my fault. But you know what? Getting back to the stadium, being inside, getting ready to watch live football, I'm not going to complain about being there an extra 15, 20, 30 minutes because I love being at a stadium and watching live sporting events.
Yeah, it's nice to just get there and breathe it all in for a bit, you know, before the game actually starts.
Yeah, but you said you watched on the live stream, so how did that go? That was a pretty big thing. We know how I feel about the CFL live streaming games. So while I didn't get to see it myself, I'm kind of interested to hear your take on it.
It was great. It looked great. No problems really with the stream stopping or anything. Once it kind of skipped for like a minute, but that was it. Then other than that, it was perfect. Very well done by the Ticats. It was like being at the game because it was basically the scoreboard. Feed or whatever. So you got to see like all the in between stuff on the scoreboard in the stadium. So it was really cool. Really well done.
Yeah, that's what I've been sort of hearing from from people is that, yeah, it was basically it was like watching the scoreboard, and yeah, it went off without a hitch. Did you get a chance was there like pregame, halftime, and postgame like stuff as well? Because like they do in-game stuff with Ticats TV. They have a panel with Ozzy and Mike Morreale, and they had an interview with the new commissioner. Did you get a chance to see any of that?
I'm not sure about the pregame. I listened to some on the radio the pregame, but I didn't tune into the stream until the game started. But yeah, I did see the Ticats TV panel with Ozzy and Morreale and the new girl they have on there like during halftime and stuff. So yeah, it showed that too.
That's cool, because that was something they added at Tim Hortons Field last year. I thought it was a great addition, because it kind of, if you're one of those people, I'm not a guy who usually gets up during the game. I like to sit in my seat and I pretty much watch it. I'll do my eating or drinking beforehand. I don't really get up and mingle around or anything. So like being able to sit there and then there's actually something to watch, and they do it every quarter break. They'll do about a 5-minute segment. How did they look? And I think for everyone to sort of see that who watched the live stream, I think that's something that I hope. I don't know. I haven't been to very many other CFL venues, but I'm hoping that maybe the other eight teams will see this and sort of bring that into sort of their in-game experience, because I think it's a really great addition to see when you're at the stadium.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I don't think any other team does it. And I watched some of it last year on, you could see some of it on the website. They had videos of the Ticats TV stuff. I think Morreale is a new addition this year, am I right?
Yeah, last year it was Ozzy, Marwan, Hage, and John Williams. He's the guy that, I don't know if you saw it after the game, but he
rings the bell thing.
He rings the bell with the sledgehammer. He was on the panel last year, and they were all really good. I get maybe those guys didn't want to come back and do it or what have you, but yeah. So Morreale is a new addition, and so is the host whose name I am forgetting. Mia Gordon. Yeah. She's the new host. Last year it was I can't remember that. It's easier to remember the player's name than to remember the host, because they change the hosts every year. So But I think like she did a great job like hosting the panel as well. So yeah, like thumbs up all around. And I'm glad to hear that the stream went off well.
Yeah, it was great.
So let's just get into the game then. That first preseason game, I guess the story coming out of that would have been Jeff Matthews just looked phenomenal in his first action as a CFL quarterback.
Really impressed with him. I mean, he looked so comfortable. I guess that makes sense since he was, in Cornell with Austin and Condell's, offensive scheme. He played there when they were there, right?
Yep. I think they spent 3 years together. And then when Austin came up here, it was Matthew's final season at Cornell.
Yeah, so it's basically the same scheme, but, I'm sure there's some tweaks for the Canadian game. But, yeah, he looked very comfortable. 9 for 15, 188 yards, 2 touchdowns. I mean, the guy looked great. I think he's going to be the backup quarterback.
I think Ken Austin said yesterday that he is the backup quarterback going into week one. I know Austin says these things like the team has a depth chart only because they have to have a depth chart and stuff like that. But yeah, the way Matthews played against Ottawa, I went into that game kind of worried about Hamilton's backup quarterback situation. And I came out of it with both Matthews and Ja'Cory Harris, who I think played really, really well and earned himself the number three job over Jeremiah Masoli. Masoli's on the one-game injured list to start the season. I thought both of them played really well. I thought Matthews played better than Harris. Harris made that one poor decision on the interception in the corner of the end zone. But otherwise, I thought Harris played a really great game as well.
Yeah, I was impressed with Harris too. Yeah, he made some really nice throws. No, he didn't have the numbers that Matthews did, but he didn't throw as many balls as Matthews. So he was 5 of 9, 73 yards, 1 interception. So, yeah, he looked good too.
And he would have had a touchdown pass. Terrell Sinkfield threw a beautiful, beautiful, like, tight spiral right into Sinkfield, who was like, coverage was draped on him and just like dropped it right in there, right into his hands. And he was tackled at like the half yard line. And then Harris had the rushing touchdown the very next play to score. So he would have also thrown a TD pass in there too. Speaking of TD passes, the play that stood out for me in the game, and I don't want to speak for you, but I'm pretty sure you're probably going to feel the same way, was when, was the 73 yard touchdown bomb to Terrence Tolliver when Matthews got flushed out of the pocket. And one of the things, sort of a negative of Matthews' game, is that he's not very mobile. Mm-hmm. But on that play, he showed some pretty quick feet and some pretty sound decision-making. And I'm not sure if you could tell on the live stream, because I'm not sure what they were showing on the video board, but if in person, he had both Tolliver and Bakari Grant streaking up the field there, and he could have hit either one. And to be honest with you, when he threw the pass, I thought he had overthrown Grant, and Tolliver was right there and just caught in stride and away. It was a really beautiful play.
Yeah, it was. It was very pretty.
Especially for a broken play. Like, that wasn't their design. That design is obviously not nearly get sacked, roll to your left, and toss a 70-yard bomb. But it was – it showed me that he – it may not be mobile, but he's mobile enough.
Yeah, he can do it when he has to. And, yeah, he rolled out of the pocket. He kind of pointed downfield for Tolliver to take off, to kind of go deep. And he threw a laser in there, and boom, he was gone. And it was really pretty.
Yeah, and he took a shot on that play too. The Ottawa defender, whomever it was that was chasing him, got a lick on him just after he threw the ball. It was and that was the play that after he gets hit, he gets up and sprints downfield, and it was just very heartening to see and really put the fears to bed for me regarding our backup quarterback position.
Yeah, I'm a lot more confident in our backups now that I saw them play, because they looked really, really good.
Another thing from that game that really stood out for me was the play of the special teams. We know Medlock is like Mr. Automatic, so there was really no concern there. But Quincy McDuffie essentially had two kick returns, a kick and a punt return for a touchdown. And this was all based on – well, I guess the kick return's not, but the punt return is all based on these new rules. And not seeing the Winnipeg game, although I did listen to it completely on the radio. I don't think Banks returned any kicks or punts, so we haven't seen what he's going to do with these new rules. But seeing what McDuffie did and knowing how great Banks is, I am just salivating at the possibility of what Brandon Banks can now accomplish. Having seen the rules in person, holy smokes. That guy could – we were talking, I think, on a previous episode. Someone asked if Banks or Williams would break the return record, and I seriously think it's not only could it be broken, but it could be obliterated.
Yeah, and even Sinkfield had a nice return on a punt where he kind of backtracked a bit and then turned it upfield for about 24 yards. So yeah, I'm excited about that new rule. I think it's going to be a lot of exciting plays on special teams. You know, the depth at punt return, kick return is that we have is truly outstanding. I mean, McDuffie, Sinkfield, Banks. I think there was one more guy in there too, but yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I'm just so excited for this year to start with the special teams rules, and Hamilton's going to tear it up on the kick returns and punt returns.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think you're going to see so many special teams touchdowns this year from the Ticats and from teams around the league, but like you mentioned, those three guys there alone, oh man, it's gonna be fun to watch. Is there anything else before we move on to the Winnipeg game? Is there anything else that stood out for you in the Ottawa matchup?
Yeah, I think Grant really stood out. Bakari Grant, I mean, he was making catches, 4 for 73. I think this guy is poised to have a great year this year. I think he's really motivated to show the team that it was worth signing him. So I'm really pumped to see what he'll do this season. And Grigsby with a couple of drops, you know, that's going to happen. I'm not going to be too hard on him, but I think he should have had those catches with the two drops with Grigsby.
Yeah, I was a little less than thrilled with the Grigsby drops as well. Now, the one up the sideline, at least from where I sat, people have disputed with me on this, but the consensus where I was sitting essentially was Grigsby, even if he had caught the pass, would have stepped out of bounds, and it would have been an incomplete pass anyway. That said, it would have still been nice to see him catch the pass, just for the simple fact that you don't want to be dropping passes at any point, regardless of where you are on the field. The second one, though, the one essentially in the middle of the field, it was a bit of a poor throw by Matthews, a little behind Grigsby, but not poor enough that he shouldn't still have caught the ball. If it was a little bit of a better throw, Grigsby probably would have gotten in the end zone. But I don't think, at least I don't recall, catching the ball being much of what Grigsby does well. He is a pretty good pass blocker, and he's a great inside runner, but he's not sort of the triple threat that CJ Gable is, which is why if Gable wasn't hurt, he's the starter because he can do it all.
Yeah.
But again, yeah, it was a little disheartening, but again, not so bad because again, the Ticats have so many pass catchers that they're not going to be relying on Grigsby or many of the running backs until Gable gets back into the mix to catch the ball. Like there's just so many weapons on that offense. And you brought up Bakari Grant, and this can kind of dovetail nicely into the Winnipeg game. I think he had an outstanding preseason altogether. I'm not sure what his numbers were against the Bombers. I do know he scored the opening touchdown, but he's been working out of the slot mostly during the preseason. And essentially he looks like he's filling in for Luke Tasker, and he has just been phenomenal. I don't know if he's got a chip on his shoulder. I don't know what the reason is, but he could be in line for a massive, massive season, developing some chemistry with Zach Collaros. Like he's just been great.
Yeah, really high on Grant this year for sure.
The entire offense, and so let's move on to the Winnipeg game. The entire offense in that Winnipeg game, the starting offense, I would say look great, but we didn't get a chance to see. We both got a chance to hear. Yeah. They sounded phenomenal. Collaros was like 14-17 for 180 something yards and a touchdown, and just had masterful command of the offense. I wish I would have seen it because I would have liked to have seen sort of like what he was doing on his reads and how he was protected in the pocket and all that stuff. But from the way it sounded, he looks to be in midseason form. And I know this is probably going to be a theme of the next little while, but he could be in for a huge season as well.
Yeah. I watched some of the highlights on TSN, but they're very minimal.
Yeah, same here. I went to the CFL website to try to find some, and it was essentially like a 45-minute clip, so I didn't get to see much. Well,
45 seconds.
45 seconds. Did I say minutes?
Yeah.
I think it was 45 minutes.
That'd yeah, both 45. Best.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, 14-17, a touchdown, 183 yards and a half. I mean, that gives me a lot of confidence in Collaros, and you know, he just he knows the offense so well after a year being in it and with pretty much the same receivers around him. So, like you said, I expect him to have a monster year this year. And Grant again, phenomenal game. Five catches, 87 yards, a touchdown. I mean, this guy's on fire already.
Yeah, and that's why I'm so concerned that he's not practicing today. I really want to see him on the field because That's a big body there that you're throwing in the slot, and he's a veteran player. This is, I believe, his fifth year in the league. You got him and Fantuz. Those are two massive men,
yeah.
Receiver-wise, that could be patrolling the slot for the Ticats, and that's going to give Collaros a lot of sort of leeway in the passing game to just find those guys who both of them very sure-handed, just hit those guys. Like, and with the new rules where you can't touch them after 5 yards. Like Grant Fantuz both in the slot working with the motion and the waggle, like, oh man, like these, I think the goal of these rules was to see offense go up. And based on what I've seen and heard, I think those rules are going to make offensive numbers go through the roof.
Yeah. Did you watch any of the other games on stream?
No, I didn't. Most of the other games, I was essentially like busy with other stuff. I was either at work or. Yeah. I just didn't really have a chance. And like the two games that they were streaming this week were streamed while the Cats game was on. So I really wanted to focus on that because I had to write an article for 3 Down Nation, and I wanted us to be able to get a little conversation in about it, obviously, too. But the only other stream I've really heard anything about was the one between the Argos and Bombers, which I heard was just a complete disaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watched the BC Edmonton one. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't as good as the Ticats one, for sure.
Was that one on TSN, or was it on like one of the team's websites?
Yeah, it was TSN Go. They were streaming the Edmonton game and the Ryder-Stamps game at the same time. I didn't really watch the Ryder-Stamps game, but the Edmonton-BC game was all right, but it wasn't spectacular.
Yeah, the one complaint I heard about the Argos-Bombers one was that there was no sound, like there was no commentary. It was basically like you were just watching the game sitting in the stands and couldn't really hear anything or know who anyone was. And in the preseason, that's kind of difficult. You kind of need there's guys who aren't really playing, like that won't make the team, and whose numbers and names you don't really recognize. I made the comment to people when I was at the game against Ottawa. They usually hand out these roster packages things before the game. It's like a sheet of paper that says who's on where. It's nice and glossy. You turn around, it's usually got a player picture on it or something. The one game I actually needed for is the preseason game. It's the one game they don't really hand it out. So mm-hmm. I can't imagine being able to watch a game without any sort of commentating, not knowing who's going on or who's where and what's kind of like, who's that guy? Who's number 87 for Winnipeg? I don't know who that is. Was there audio commentating for the BC Edmonton game?
Not at first. And then they added I think it was the BC radio feed.
Okay.
But it wasn't, you had to like turn it up full blast to be able to hear it. And it wasn't great. But I was just going to ask you, like, I guess you didn't watch any of the other stream games, but the Edmonton BC game had a massive amount of flags. And the Saskatchewan game last week, I think it was, had a huge, like 50 something flags. So, but compared to the, I think that the Hamilton Ottawa game didn't have that many flags at all, really, did they?
No, not really. It didn't seem like it. There were a few, obviously, but yeah. It didn't seem like there was an inordinate number of flags, like no more than in a regular game.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that the Hamilton Ottawa game went pretty smoothly.
I didn't really notice a ton of flags in the Winnipeg game. From what I was hearing, it wasn't a flag fest.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. Is maybe the Ticats, considering they're the common denominator in both games, maybe they have sort of figured out the rules a little quicker than the other teams. I don't want to say like the other teams don't know what they're doing, but both two Hamilton games and I didn't really notice penalties as much. So maybe Austin and Co. have been able to sort of instill what these rules are going to be all about, and the team has taken to it.
Yeah, hopefully, because it was tough to watch the BC Edmonton game. There was a flag every play, and
yeah, there was like, I thought I read something where or heard something. Maybe it was on one of the other CFL podcasts. Which to go off on a tangent a bit, man, the CFL podcast community is sure growing, and we've been getting a lot of shout outs on some shows. So I think we've got a few fans out there, pal.
Ooh.
But yeah, I might have been listening to the Eskimos Eskimo Empire podcast, which is a great show, and they might have been talking about the previous Edmonton game against Saskatchewan. There might have been a lot of flags in that one too, but and maybe it was on Twitter that I saw. But something like 50 some odd flags for like 300 or 400 yards of penalties or something. Yeah. Like just astronomical numbers that just make absolutely no sense.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't carry over to the regular season, because it's hard to watch when there's that many flags, that many stoppages. It's just painful, man. Painful.
I agree. I was at I can't remember. It was one of the two Argos Ticats games. It might have been the second one. And it just seemed – no, it was the first one, because the first one was a night game. And it just seemed like the flags – it was a flag every other play. And I don't want to see that this year. I understand it's probably going to take a little getting used to for the players and the coaches and even the refs themselves to sort of figure out the flow of the penalties and the flow of the game and everything like that. But so I think we'll probably see early a lot of flag games. But, man, hopefully the Ticats keep up their pace and – their games are pretty flag free.
Yeah, that's the main hope that I have, is that the Ticats games are flow smoothly and are fun to watch, and they put a whooping on the other team every game.
So before we move on to previewing the start of the season for the Tabbies, is there anything else from the Winnipeg game you'd like to touch on?
I liked what I heard about Holly, the running back that's there. He sounds like he's a hard-nosed runner and played a pretty good game.
Yeah, well, he has been activated off the practice roster. He is filling Eric Norwood's position, like on the active roster. Now he's obviously not playing defensive end; that would be ridiculous. but yeah, so maybe he sees some time against the Stampeders.
Mm-hmm.
And asking that question, there is one other player that I would like to bring up, because I think he had, if not the best preseason of anyone on the Ticats, he had probably the best preseason of anyone on the defense. And that's Adrian Tracy, the defensive end. Four sacks in two games.
Wow.
Three against Ottawa, one against Winnipeg. Unfortunately, he's starting the season off on the one-game injured list, so we will not see him against Calgary,
which
sucks now, especially due to the injury to Norwood. If Norwood could have got injured 2 days earlier, as much as I don't want to see Norwood injured, maybe Tracy finds his way onto the game day roster and continues his excellent play into the regular season. But he was just a force of nature out there.
Yeah, interesting to see how he fits in, like, when the regular season gets going. I mean, he's only on the one game, right?
Yeah, he's only on the one game.
Okay, so maybe we'll see him later on in the season.
I thought Antonio Coleman, who's on the six-game injured list, seems like any player we mentioned is going to end up being on some bloody injured list.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to be the guy to sort of spell Hickman and Norwood, but this Tracy kid came out of nowhere, and if you could have those three guys sort of rotating in, and once everyone's healthy, obviously, man, that pass rush could be something fierce.
Yeah, loving the depth.
So that's the preseason in a nutshell, a pretty large nutshell, mind you. I guess and I can't believe I'm actually saying these words, since we started this in January, we've been waiting essentially 6 months to preview our first regular season game of the 2015 season. The Ticats head to Calgary to take on the Stampeders in a Grey Cup rematch on Friday. This game is actually on TV, as will the rest of the games, obviously, on TSN. So what are you sort of looking forward to in this opening week contest between the Cats and the Stamps?
Well, Grey Cup rematch, obviously. It's I'm really excited to watch this game. I'm excited to see Claros play. I'm excited to see how the team does against a great Calgary team that some people are picking already to win the Grey Cup. Aren't even giving the other teams a chance. But listen, I think that Hamilton's going to come out, and I think they're going to play a really good game against the Stamps. They're going to be motivated to win this game. Claros is going to have a great game, I think. You know, Grant might not even be playing, but I think the offense is going to play well. I think the defense is going to be fired up. I think Banks might potentially have a big game on special teams. So I'm just pumped overall to watch this game. I just can't wait.
I can't really disagree with anything you say there. I'm interested to see how the secondary plays out. They didn't really solidify anyone back there, and Calgary has a pretty deep receiving core and an excellent quarterback in Bo Levi Mitchell. The Cats were kind of able to contain, and I say this loosely because you don't really contain him, but they were kind of able to contain John Cornish in the Grey Cup. He didn't really make much of an impact. It was a low scoring game, obviously, but I don't really remember Cornish really doing all that much, so maybe the Cats have sort of found a way to minimize his impact, which is difficult. He's far and away the best running back in the league, so I'm kind of curious as to how they will deal with him as well. I'm just hoping, as much as I want the Ticats to win, they haven't won in Calgary since 2004, which coincidentally is also the last year that they actually won the opening game of the season. Mm-hmm. So an 0-1 start to me is, I don't want to say assured, but I'm not gonna hold my breath on them sort of beating the Stamps in Calgary, because that's a tough place to win for anybody.
Yeah, it's the land of no wins for the Ticats and the land of not making field goals.
Comes down to a last second field goal, I am going to probably have eaten my entire hand off, chewing my nails in nervousness. What's it? Two of the last 3 years, botched field goals have stopped them from tying the game.
Yep. So the snow game a couple years ago, the game last year where they could have tied it late, I think, and then this one wasn't in Calgary, obviously, but the Grey Cup game where they blocked a field goal on the Ticats. So
yeah,
they've had some bad luck lately with the field goal kicking. But just to touch on the shutting down or containing Cornish in the Grey Cup, according to him, he was just a decoy that game. So I don't know how much we contained him or not, but he was just saying that because he wasn't happy with his numbers. I don't know.
I that doesn't, like, okay, he can say that, and mm-hmm. maybe he believes that, and it's possible that it's true. But what kind of offensive game plan would call for the best running back in the CFL to be a decoy? Did the Alouettes use Mike Pringle as a decoy all those years they had him? No, he was rushing for 150 yards. And you know what? I remember him saying that. It's kind of silly. Like, maybe it is just he was upset with his performance and was kind of looking for a sort of a way out of criticism. But I just can't see Calgary using him as a decoy, especially in a game that was so close. Yeah, Calgary went out to stake themselves out to a 14-0 lead pretty early. But the Cats started clawing their way back, pardon the pun. And you would think near the end of the game they would want to pound Cornish to kill the clock, because there was a fair bit of time left when Hamilton returned that kick that didn't count. So I don't know. I still think the Cats just did a good job of keeping Cornish contained.
Yeah, he didn't get a ton of touches, but when he did touch the ball, they shut him down pretty good. So I don't know how much of a decoy he actually was, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Anything else that you're kind of looking forward to in this upcoming game?
I'm a little excited to see what the crowd's like. I mean, the great defending Grey Cup champs, first game of the season in Calgary. I think it should be close to a sellout. And apparently this is a big 50-50 ticket, because it carried over from the last game. So I would like to see very close to a sellout. You know, we get some hype around this opening game, or not the opening game, because there's a game before that on Thursday. But, you know, a Grey Cup rematch. I want to see the stadium packed and loud.
Yeah, same here. I was going to, when kind of prepping for this podcast, this episode at least, I was kind of figuring, should we do like game predictions or anything? And the idea came to me that no, because we're both just going to pick the Ticats 18 times.
Yeah.
As I said, I think the Stamps probably pull this one out. I'm not going to pick against Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
That's just ridiculous. So that sort of wraps up sort of our game review and game preview.
I'm just going to say, can I just say?
Yep, say whatever you need. Whatever you need. It's your show. Jeez, man, don't yell.
The Ticats will, write this down, people, Ticats will win this game.
Okay, you know what? This is funny that you say that. Okay, so I got a text message from a friend of mine who listens to the show. He listens to a lot of sort of football and fantasy football podcasts, and he has – on one of the shows, I'm not sure which one it is that he listens to, but he says when the hosts make a prediction, they quote-unquote put it on the board and then go back to it and either, holy crap, you got this right, or, oh my God, you're such an idiot. I'm thinking we're going to take that, because we're about to do some season preview predictions here, which are probably going to be completely wrong, and I want us to either be able to chirp about how we did well or have fans come at us in lighthearted fun and be like, how the hell did you pick Ottawa to win the East? Are you a complete moron?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to keep track of sort of all the predictions we make. And yours, my friend, is the first one on the board. You're saying the Ticats will beat the Stampeders this Friday.
Book it.
Done. It's on the board.
Yeah.
So, like I said, we're going to do some a big, gigantic season preview here, and we're going to predict a whole ton of stuff. I'm going to keep track of everything. We're going to find out. We're going to come back at the end of the season, end of the regular season, I think, and see where sort of our predictions fell. Are you ready? Ready to get going?
Let's do this.
All right. So being Ticat fans, let's kick things off by starting with the East Division. Obviously I have Hamilton finishing in first place to the shock of everybody listening. I just think that the Ticats are one of the deepest, most talented teams in the league, and especially in the East Division. So I don't see much in the way of teams challenging them in the East Division this year. After that, it's a bit of a crapshoot. I really was sort of set with who I was going to go with at the beginning of the preseason, and then I watched as Toronto looked decent. Montreal looked a bit hit or miss, and Ottawa just looked like as bad as they were last year. But that said, I'm still going to have the Owls finishing in second. I think the veteran leadership on that team, with the additions of Stamps and Nick Lewis and Sam Giguere and just all those weapons that they have given Jonathan Crompton, I think that's going to lead them to a second place finish. I'm going to surprisingly take Ottawa to finishing third. It might be a bit of a slow start for them this year. Usually it is when you bring in a bunch of new coaches and new players, but I still think that that could be a team that coming into the latter half of the season could really put some wins together and really sort of make a push for the playoffs. And in last place, I have Toronto simply because no Ricky Ray. You lose a quarterback the caliber of Ray, who is, since Anthony Calvillo retired, probably the best quarterback in the CFL, and you just don't replace him. I know the team is high on Trevor Harris, but I don't think they will be able to sort of make a bunch of wins happen in the early part of the season. They're on the road for a lot of that time, so I don't see the Argos really doing much this year. So yeah, I have them in fourth place.
Yeah, I was gonna argue with you about your picks, but the same as mine. I got Ticats first, Alouettes second, Red Blacks third, Argos fourth. I had a tough time with second place, as you did, as you said. You know, Crompton looked pretty bad in preseason. He was sailing balls. But I just, you know, Alouettes have a strong, I think they have a strong defense, and they got, if Crompton can get it together in the regular season, I think they can be a pretty good team. So I got them second. The Red Blacks, you know, they signed a lot of good wide receivers, slot backs, whatever. But I don't know if Burris can get it done. I don't know if the offensive line can give him enough time. And if he doesn't have enough time, he's going to make mistakes. So I got them in third. And the Argos is pretty much the same as you. Ray out for 6 weeks. A lot of question marks about that team. So I don't see the Argos doing anything this year. I think they're going to miss the playoffs. And I might have said on a previous podcast that I have the Red Blacks making the playoffs. But in this prediction, I don't have them making the playoffs. I only have two teams from the East making the playoffs.
Yeah, we'll get to the playoffs in a second. That's kind of where I'm sort of putting out my boldest predictions.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, with the East, again, maybe people will think we're biased, but it's the Ticats division to lose. I don't see how the other three teams stack up against them. The Ticats are just too deep of a team, and there's just so many question marks for the other teams. The only thing that can really hold Hamilton back is starting the season with four straight on the road. They could get into a hole like they've done last year especially, but that doesn't seem to really cripple them all that much. They started 1-6 last year with all those road games and still found a way to get to the Grey Cup. So the East Division just, once again, does not look very good with the exception of Hamilton. So I would not be surprised if Toronto found a way to win 10 games and finish second. And you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's very hard to predict in the East this year, for sure.
It's impossible because of how bad the teams are, in my estimation.
Mm.
The opposite of that is the West,
yeah,
where I think it's hard to predict because of how good most of the teams look.
Yeah.
So why don't you take the lead on this one and give us your West predictions, and then I can call you a moron, even though you didn't call me a moron, because we had the same four teams in the same four positions.
All right. Okay, I got the Stamps first, which may not be a surprise to anyone, really. They're heavy favorites, I'd say, in the whole league. I got the Eskimos second, the Riders third, Bombers fourth, Lions fifth. Now, feel free to call me an idiot or whatever you want to.
Well, we're not that far off. Swap Winnipeg and Saskatchewan. I am not high on the Riders at all. Again, people will probably think it's my anti-Rider bias, but they lost a lot of offensive line talent. They had a really great offensive line and could run the football last year. And Ben Heenan's gone, and Dominic Picard is gone, and that's two solid players that you just don't replace very easily. I also think, and this might be sacrilege in Saskatchewan, but I think they're gonna regret letting George Cortez go. We all know that as a head coach, he was pretty much a failure, but as an offensive coordinator, I'm pretty sure, or as a coordinator in general, I'm pretty sure he's got 5 Grey Cup rings, and as an offensive coordinator, he's got like 3 or 4. The guy can design an offense, and when Durant was healthy, that team was 8-2, and no one was really making any complaints. It was only when Durant got hurt and then the rest of the quarterbacks were hot garbage that they had to call in Kerry Joseph from wherever the hell he was hanging out to sort of save the day. I don't see the Riders really making a push for anything other than them and the Bombers might be fighting out for third place, and Saskatchewan might find a way to cross over into the East if they finish fourth. But I just like Winnipeg more than I like Saskatchewan. I think Winnipeg made a lot of upgrades. I think Drew Willey's going to get time in the pocket that he didn't get last year to make throws downfield, and Winnipeg to me is a surprise team. I have them finishing third, but I would not be surprised if they finish as high as second. Like you, I got Calgary first and Edmonton second, but like I said, I think Winnipeg could challenge the Esks. The Esks lost John White, who is a big was going to be a big part of that offense. I'm a big John White fan. I think he's a great running back. And Mike Riley doesn't always stay healthy. If he does, I think he'll put up, and I think we've said this about everyone so far, he'll put up huge numbers and have a great year. But he's not; he hasn't played a full season yet. So if injuries befall the Eskimos, I could see the Bombers making a push for second in the West. And then last I had BC. I just think too much turnover. I don't have a solid feel about the Lions. Now, every year they make the playoffs, it seems, but sooner or later that run's got to come to an end. I think this is the year that the Lions sort of take a step back before taking a step forward in the years ahead.
Yeah, I agree with the. You almost made me grab my decision on the Bombers Riders. I think I'm going to have to switch that, but can't now. It's too late now. I made my
It's on the board.
Yeah, it's on the board. I think the Stamps finishing first. I think they're just a very, very good team. I think with the S losing John White, that's a big loss, but I also think them bringing in Chad Simpson is a really good move.
I agree.
I like Chad Simpson. He looked really good in the preseason. I know that's just preseason, but he was running with purpose, and I think he can rack up some yards for the S. I have a lot of confidence in Chad Simpson. Was he out of the league last year?
Yeah, I think he's been out since 2013. I think he got hurt in 2013, and then the Bombers just didn't bring him back.
Or he didn't want to come back after that.
Yeah, something like that.
But yeah, I think he had a year off to heal up, and now he's back, and I think he's going to have a pretty good year, and he's going to do a really good job filling in for John White.
Yeah, I don't think he's as good a player, honestly, as John White is. I think John White could have been, like, we could have been talking John White as, like, league's leading rusher, or he could have been one of those guys. Like, his yards per carry last year was something like close to 7. It was something ludicrous. When he was healthy, he was a dynamic player. But I do think Simpson can probably do just not just as well as White, but he can hold down the fort this season. I like Simpson as a player. I liked him in Winnipeg. That was a solid move by the Eskimos to pick him up.
Yeah, and he's a much better supporting cast than he did with the Bombers. So I look forward to seeing him play. With the Lions, I mean, there's just so many question marks. I think, Tedford might be a good coach, but if you don't have the players, and with Lule, you just never know if he's going to stay healthy or not. One hit and he could be out. So you never know. Anything can happen, but I have the Lions finishing last as well. So there's just too many question marks with them.
All right, so we pretty much agree on everything, which means that everyone listening should probably take what we said and completely erase it, because we're going to be wrong as well. I'm not going to curse, but what word I'm trying to think of. So why don't we move on to the playoffs then? I know we haven't even played a regular season game, but I'm ready to go out on a pretty massive limb here and pick on the playoffs. Who do you have making the playoffs?
Okay, I got Ty Cats, Alouettes in the East, Stamps, S, Riders, Bombers. Bombers is a crossover to the East from the West.
Okay. I have got Hamilton, Montreal, and Ottawa, and Calgary, Edmonton, and Winnipeg. So no crossover for me. Mm. So your East semifinal would then be Winnipeg at Montreal. Yep. Who do you got in that one?
Got the Bombers over Montreal.
Bombers over Montreal. I too have Montreal losing in the East semifinal, but I got them losing to the Red Blacks.
Oof.
That's right. Ottawa in year two is going to win a playoff game. That's my bold prediction. Put it on the board.
It's on the board, buddy.
So in the West semi, you have Saskatchewan and Edmonton.
Esks over the Riders.
Yeah, I got Edmonton beating Winnipeg. Again, if guys stay healthy, that Edmonton team's going to be close to a juggernaut, in my opinion.
In the East, East final, I got the Ticats beating the Bombers.
Okay. In the East semifinal, I have Ottawa beat. No, I'm just kidding. I got the Ticats beating the Red Blacks. I very nearly that was going to be my major prediction. I very nearly had Ottawa go into the Grey Cup, but ooh, it's tough to predict a team going 3 years in a row. But like I said, when we were discussing the East standings, the Ticats are head and shoulders above everyone in the East. If they get a week off and a home playoff game, they ain't losing. Ticats go back. We both agree on that one, to the shock of every one of our listeners. So the West final, you have Edmonton and Calgary, correct?
Yes, sir.
Who do you got winning that one?
I got the Eskimos beating the Stamps.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. I'm looking at my sheet of paper here, and in the West final, I have Edmonton over Calgary.
Oh,
so
wow.
Your Grey Cup and my Grey Cup are the exact same.
Wow.
And do we even have to bother telling them who we think is going to win the Grey Cup, or...
I don't think so. I got the
Ticats. Yeah, shocker of all shockers. Ticats over Edmonton in the 103rd Grey Cup.
Yeah.
If that is the matchup, if we peg that one right, I think that's going to be a hell of a game.
Yeah, I agree. Two great teams going at it in the elements in Winnipeg. So it should be – I'd be very excited to watch that game if it turns out that it happens. So
the last time those two teams met was the 86 Grey Cup. When I think Edmonton went in as some sort of like ridiculous favorite because the Cats were like just above or at 500 going into the game, and Hamilton just put a beating on them. So I don't think we would see a repeat of that this year, even though Hamilton would obviously be the more championship experienced club between the two, having played in the two most recent Grey Cups. But I don't know. I'm sure the guys over at the Eskimo Empire podcast will disagree with us on taking Hamilton over Edmonton, but I all I know is if those teams played, hell of a game. I would love to watch it. I want to watch it now. Let's just skip the season. No, let's not skip the season. There's way too much fun to be
had. Yeah, you got to enjoy the season, buddy. Jeez.
Okay, so now that we've made sort of team predictions, you ready to move on to the awards?
Yeah.
Because this was tough for me, because there's really no consensus for any of these sort of awards, I don't think. And obviously we haven't seen anyone play, and we don't know who's going to get hurt and who's going to step up. Like picking most outstanding rookie is nearly impossible. Picking most outstanding lineman is pretty darn difficult. Let's start. Should we start at the top? No, we'll save MLP for last, because that's the big one. Let's start with most outstanding special teams player. I have, to the surprise of everyone, I have Brandon Banks.
Yep, so do I.
I just think, like when we were talking before about the new rules, he could score close to 10 touchdowns on special teams this year. I know that sounds like a completely ludicrous statement to make, but you know what? We're making another prediction here. Brandon Banks will return 10 touchdowns this year. I'm all about making stupid predictions now. I'm saying it. Banks breaks the record, scores 10 touchdowns this year on special teams.
Breaks the record by a mile.
By a mile.
That's bold.
That's bold.
I like it.
Got to go bold.
Yep. Go big or go home.
Exactly. Shall we move on to most outstanding lineman? This one, pick a name out of a hat, really. I picked Stanley Bryant. I think he's going to go over to Winnipeg and show how good he is. I think he was an all-star the last 2 years, but kind of, I won't say overshadowed, but kind of overlooked because Brent Jones was there, and the Stamps were just an all-around great team. I think he goes to Winnipeg, proves that he wasn't just a cog in the wheel, that he is the premier left tackle in the CFL, and I think he gets his due recognition with a getting that award the week before Grey Cup.
Can't believe you just said that.
Why? Did you have you picked?
I have Stanley Bryan.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me.
No, I'm dead serious.
This is insane.
Yeah. Wow. Great mind, right?
I guess. I'm going to assume we're going to differ on most outstanding rookie. Although if we pick this one right, I don't know what I'm going to say.
All right, let me go first on the
rookie. Okay, you go first. You go first.
All right, Nick Dembski.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me.
No way.
Most outstanding rookie, Nick Dembski.
Wow.
Like I said, picking a rookie's hard. I don't like. There's probably some American guy out there who we don't know about yet. Who's going to step up and okay, you know what? I originally had AJ Jefferson picked.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
But he's not a rookie. He doesn't count because he played games in the NFL during the regular season. So he does like he's a CFL rookie, but he's not a pro football rookie, so it doesn't count. Yeah. He was my seeing some of the highlights of what he did in the preseason and how he's played at training camp, just all the words that have come out about how great he is. Mm-hmm. I figured he could be like a Delvin Bro type where he comes up here and sort of just locks guys down. But then when I found out he wasn't eligible for the award, I was just, well, who do we got? And I think Dembski gets a chance in that Saskatchewan receiving corps just because Getzlaff's a little older and not super durable. Bag tends to get hurt. And the Riders ratio situation is a bit of a mess. So I think Dembski gets a shot about halfway through the season to start and puts up enough numbers over the latter half of the season to get the award.
Yeah, I think they're going to find a way to get him the ball. I mean, he has a lot of speed. He's a pretty well-polished receiver coming out of CIS football. All the scouting reports said he was the most like pro-ready receiver out of the draft. So, yeah, I thought Nick Dembski was a good pick for Rookie of the Year, and I think that he's going to get his touches.
All right. Moving on. Most outstanding Canadian. We might have this one the same, too. I got John Cornish. Until someone knocks him off the perch, I'm not picking against him as the top Canadian. If he plays 18 games, he thinks he can rush for 2,000 yards. I'm not one to doubt him. I think he's a great player. So, yeah, Cornish for most outstanding Canadian.
All right. That's a good pick.
Are you picking something different?
Yes, yes. People might think I'm a little bit crazy or a bit of a homer, but I'm going to go Fantuz. I think that he still has some left in the tank. I still think he has a couple really good years. I think this year is a contract year for him. I think he's going to be highly motivated to have a big year. I think they're going to utilize him a lot down in the red zone, green zone, whatever you want to call it. I just think he's going to have a huge bounce back year. I think he's going to stay healthy for most of the year. There's obviously no way to predict if he's going to be healthy or not, but I just have a feeling that he's going to be healthy for at least 14, 15 games. So my pick for most outstanding Canadian is Fantuz.
I had thought about taking Fantuz as my pick, but until I see him play a close to a full season again, it's hard to really sort of put my chips on him. I agree. If he does play, say, 15 to 17 games, I'm hoping that the 18th and final game of the season is one where the Cats don't have to play anyone because they've already locked everything up so they can sort of rest any beaten-up bodies. He could very easily, lead the league in receiving or be very high up. It's tough to pick against Cornish because if he leads the league in rushing and you're another offensive player who doesn't do that, like if you're Fantuz and you finish seventh in the league in receiving, even if you put up, say, 1,200 yards, but Cornish rushes for 1,700, I just don't see any way that voters can sort of go against Cornish. It's really Cornish's to lose, but if I was to pick someone outside of the obvious, and yeah, that's – okay, so that's an obvious pick in picking John Cornish. But yeah, Fantuz isn't a bad pick.
All good points.
So
I could go either way with Fantuz or Cornish, but yeah. It's nice that we have a different pick, once in a while.
Yeah, it gives us a chance to actually talk about something instead of going, yep, that's the guy we got.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to also guess that probably our most outstanding defensive player and most outstanding player are probably going to be different. But let's go with most outstanding defensive player. I have, to the delight of Saskatchewan Rough Rider fans that listen to this podcast, John Chick. Mm-hmm. I think he's one of those rare guys that has come back from the NFL and picked up right where he left off. He had a great season last year and really only didn't win most outstanding defensive player of the year because of Solomon Elamimian. I don't know if Elamimian is going to put up the same numbers or even close to the same numbers that he did last year. But I still think Chick is a pass rushing monster. He's going to get double digit sacks. He's going to get high teen sacks. He's going to get like 16, 17 sacks. So yeah, Chick is my guy into 2015.
All right, I got another homer pick. I'm going with Simone Lawrence.
Oh, Hove.
Yeah, I think he's going to have a spectacular year. He just keeps getting better. I think he's going to stay healthy. And, you know, yeah, I think he got nicked up a bit in training camp, but I think he's all right. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, he's not missing any time. They held him out of the two preseason games, but I think they held a lot of starters out of the first one just simply because it was more about evaluating the younger guys that are on the cusp of making the team or getting cut. And then I think they held a lot of starters out of the second one simply because they didn't want to get anyone injured anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he has a huge year. I think he's going to make plays. He's one of the defensive leaders on the team, and I think he's going to lead by example this year. So I got him as the defensive player of the year.
Yeah, no, can't disagree. He was the team's nominee last year, and I'm a big Simone Lawrence fan. I think anyone who follows me on Twitter or talks to me in person knows how much I love Simi Hove. So, yeah, if he's picking up that hardware at the end of the season, I will be a very happy man. And now we move on to the big one. This was hard for me. This was really hard. I wanted to pick Chris Williams just to piss people off. But I don't know if he's going to put up big enough numbers as a receiver and a returner to warrant most outstanding player. So I went with the guy that I think, when healthy, is probably the best quarterback in the league. And I took Edmonton's Mike Riley.
Ooh.
If Mike Riley plays a full season or close to it, 16, 17 games, he's going to throw for 5,500 yards. He's going to throw for 35 touchdowns. He's probably going to rush for 600 to 700 yards. He is on the cusp of being the face of the CFL.
All right. I like that pick. I got another quarterback from the West. I got Bo Levi Mitchell.
Yeah, not again, a guy I looked at too, but yeah. Yep. What are your particular reasons for picking Bo Levi?
Well, I think that his numbers weren't spectacular last year, but, you know, the record, you know, I know that you hate giving records to
quarterback wins. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I understand where you're going with this, though.
Yeah. And I think his best game of the year was the Grey Cup game. I think he played spectacular. I think he's going to continue that over into the season. I think they have so much receivers depth. I think, you know, Huffnagel knows how to build a team. There's going to be a lot of talent around him. I think he's going to be protected well. So I think he's going to have a lot of time to throw. And I just think he's the up and coming best player, best quarterback in the league. So I'm going to give it to Bo. Bo knows.
Bo does know. Yeah, we're not going to go too big into back and forth on that. I love Bo Levi Mitchell. To get a little personal here, I was kind of pissed when I didn't get him in our fantasy draft last night.
Yeah, I took him.
I know you took him. You took him with the pick that I traded you, which is fine because mm-hmm. I was happy with the guy I got at the seventh spot in John Cornish. But, yeah, I'm a big fan of Bo Levi Mitchell. And, yeah, again, picking these things, we don't know. Anything can happen. It's a long season. But, yeah, so we both like some Alberta quarterbacks, not even just Western ones. We like the Alberta boys.
Yeah. I'll be keeping this sheet of paper till the end of the season to see how wrong we were.
Oh, don't worry. I'm keeping track of everything we predicted. And when we do a season wrap up after the regular season's over, there'll probably be a lot of X's on this board.
All right. Perfect.
So let's keep this prediction game going. I'm having a little bit of fun with this. Let's be really stupid and let's pick who we think's going to lead in some of these big stats categories. Let's start with passing yards. Who do you got leading the league in passing yards this year?
I got Bo again, Bo Mitchell.
Okay. I got Riley. Again, no surprise that we both have the quarterback we picked for MOP taking this one. That's not really a shock to me whatsoever. Passing touchdowns?
Yep. Also Bo? No. This might be a little bit weird to some people. I got Caleros.
Oh, okay.
Even though, you know, last year they had their troubles in the red zone, I think that's a big turnaround this year, and we get tons of touchdowns. So I think Caleros is going to be hooking up with Fantu's lot in the red zone, and Grant, both tall guys, tall targets. So I got Caleros leading the league in pass touchdowns.
Wow. Do you want to put a number on that?
Ooh, that's tough. I don't know, man. That's tough. High
20s?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, like, let's say 27.
27. Okay, not bad. I got Bo Levi Mitchell leading in touchdown passes. I'm gonna say he's gonna throw 32. That's gonna be my number, which is a pretty big number. It's all a crapshoot here, to be honest with you. I don't really have a huge reason for picking Mitchell. A good receiving core in Calgary, a deep receiving core in Calgary. I know Cornish might and probably will eat into a lot of possible touchdown passes for Mitchell, but I think the Stamps offense is going to score a lot of points. So I think there's going to be more than enough touchdowns to go around for everyone in that Stampeders offense.
Right on.
Rush yards, you got leading league in rushing.
I got Cornish.
Yeah, me too.
He just continues to, you know, tear it up each and every year. The question is how longer can he do it for? He might be getting close to 30 now, I believe. So
I think he is 30, but he's a different 30. He didn't take over that starting position until late in the 2011 season, so he does not have the mileage on his body that a lot of 30-year-old running backs do.
That's true.
He did get crunched last year and missed like half the season with injuries. So yeah, I understand where you're coming with, sort of like, yeah, he's doing it now. How long can he continue to do it for? So, but yeah, same here. Like, just until someone knocks him off his perch. Like, he played half a season last year, finished with over 1,000 yards and led the league. So until someone knocks him off, I'm not moving away from Cornish, who I also have leading the league in rushing touchdowns. So
okay.
I'm glad I got him in fantasy, because I think he's going to have a big year.
Yeah, I got Simpson rushing TDs.
Oh, Chad Simpson from in Edmonton. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I just have a feeling. You know, I like the way I think he can plow through some people near the goal line. So I got Chad Simpson with leading league in rushing TDs.
What about receiving yards?
I got Bowman.
Got him repeating as receiving.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be tough, but I think that Riley's a great quarterback, and I think Bowman, you know, he's had his times where he's had the dropsies, but he had a great year last year. I think that he keeps that going this year.
I can't really disagree with that, although I am going to disagree with it because I picked SJ Green. I really think that, you know, as much as I'm not sold on Jonathan Crompton, I think I just think Green catches like everything thrown to him. He had three touchdowns in that East final last year. So I think he sort of continues on that big play role that he has had his entire career. And I think he's going to find the end zone a ton. Not sure how many, because, you know, we were stupid enough to predict touchdown passes. I'm not going to be stupid enough to predict more numbers, but yeah, I think Green leads the way in end zone trips for receivers. Receiving yards. I was looking at the wrong thing there. Who do you have as receiving TDs?
I got Fantu's.
You got Fantu's. I got Williams.
Oh, you got Chris Williams?
Yeah. People are going to be pissed, but yeah, I got Chris Williams.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think just the chemistry he has with Burris, like those guys were on fire in 2012, and I think even if Burris just throws it anywhere near him, if he's overthrown by 10 yards, Williams will go and get it. Yeah. I think I don't know how well he's going to do other than that, but I think he's going to catch like a dozen or so touchdowns.
Yeah, I think Williams is a great receiver, and I think he can score a lot of touchdowns. So I'm not going to argue with that pick. With my Fantu's,
but you went with Fantu's.
I went with Fantu's. I think that him and Claris are going to hook up a lot. I think he uses his big frame to, you know, get inside position and just uses his huge hands to grab that ball in the end zone a lot. So I think he's going to stay healthy and get a lot of touchdowns this year.
Yeah, and it makes sense. You have Caleros leading the league in touchdowns. You got to throw him to someone, and Fantuz is a really good red zone target. So,
yeah,
that's not an indefensible pick at all. Mm-hmm. So let's look at the defensive side of the ball. We'll go to the sort of big three here. Who do you think leads the league in tackles?
Well, yeah,
tough, right?
Yeah, it's very tough. Since I got Lawrence Defensive Player of the Year, I'm going to say Lawrence leads the league in tackles.
Okay. I took Solly Elamimian. Guy's a tackling machine.
Yep.
Even though he plays next to another really good linebacker, Adam Big Hill, he seems to just anything come near him, that he knocks him down. So tackles are hard to predict, and it fluctuates year to year. But yeah, give me Solly in BC.
Good pick. Solid pick.
Sacks. Who do you like as the league's sack leader?
I got, if I can pronounce it, Oke Palugo.
From Toronto.
Oke Palugo.
Yeah,
I got him. He had a great rookie season in the CFL last year, and I think he had a pretty good preseason too, so I think he carries it over, and I think he leads the league in sacks. So, you know, it's kind of off the radar pick, but I think he's going to have a monster year.
Yeah, and as much as I dislike his mate on the other side there, and Ricky Foley, it's hard for teams not to sort of shade protection over to Foley. So, okay, Palugo, or however you pronounce it, and I apologize for butchering it. I actually that's not a bad pick there, Mike. I picked John Chick to win Most Outstanding Defensive Player, and you're not a defensive lineman who wins that award if you don't lead the league in sacks, so I took Chick to lead the league in sacks.
Yeah, that's a good pick. You know, he was on fire last year at the start, so let's see if he can repeat that at the start this year, maybe continue it through the whole season.
So interceptions, I sort of did my predictions about a week or so ago, and I've been tinkering with them ever since. I had Jeff Tisdale leading the league in interceptions, and anyone who's been following the cuts know that he's not on a team right now. So kind of hard to lead the league in picks when you're unemployed. So I need to make a quick adjustment, and I went with last year's leader, Calgary Stampeders defensive back Jamar Wall. That whole Stampeders secondary is really good, and teams can't sort of shy away from anyone. And I just think, you know, Wall led last year. He could do it again this year.
I'm going to go with another Argo on this, another off-the-radar pick. A.J. Jefferson, which we talked about earlier in the season. You know, all I've heard from people that are reporting on the Argos in training camp is that he's a great player. I saw him make a pick in one of the preseason games, and it was a spectacular catch. You know, he seems to have speed. He's a tall, lanky guy. So I'm going to go out on a limb and pick A.J. Jefferson to have the most picks in the league.
Now, you watched him play. Does he remind you of Pat Watkins? Because, like, I've heard tall, lanky be as a descriptor for him. And Watkins is a big, big guy and a great defensive back. So, you see him sort of as, like, a little bit of a Watkins clone?
Yeah, I'd say that. That's what I thought of when I saw his frame and how he plays, you know, so – I hope that he has enough speed to keep up with the receivers, but apparently he does if all the reports are correct.
Yeah. My only concern with him, it would have been the same reason why if we were doing this a year ago, I wouldn't have picked Delvin Bro, just because I don't see much else in Toronto's secondary, at least on a cover man-to-man situation, that teams might be able to shy away from Jefferson and whoever he's guarding. Which will limit the number of interception opportunities he has. But maybe teams will also, you know, try to attack him because he is new to this league. And, yeah, he had a good preseason, but preseason's not the regular season. So, yeah, no, I nearly had him picked for most outstanding rookie if he was eligible. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he has a pretty big year as well.
All right, you want to go on to the few questions we have here?
I guess. We didn't really get a bunch this week. I guess, you know, we wanted to spend more time sort of talking about the games and giving our idiotic opinions. But, yeah, let's head into the questions before we call this a day.
All right, so we got two, you know, better than nothing.
Yeah, better than nothing.
We got one from @BHACon. He wants to know, how can we get more promotions on radio stations in Barrie about the best league ever? hashtag CFL rules. And I'll just say, you know, if you're outside of a city, you know, if you don't have a CFL team in your city, it's going to be hard to get promotions about the CFL, you know, on radio or on your local TV. It just doesn't happen that often. So I don't really know how to answer that question. You know, it'd be nice to get more promotion for the league outside of the cities that the teams play in, but it's just hard to do.
Yeah, I'm, you know, we're pretty much in lockstep on that one. It is tough. I do remember a few years ago, the league gave the Argos and Ticats some money to sort of spend on promotion. And I know the Cats tried to sort of reach out to sort of the southwestern Ontario market, like London and Kitchener and places like that. But you're right. It's if you're not in sort of the city proper or in one of the suburbs of the city that has a team, it's probably really difficult to get marketing out there and ads and promos and what have you, just because if the team sinks, you know, $50,000 into advertising in Barrie and no one from Barrie drives down to a game, which I would say the Argos would be sort of, that's Barrie's sort of area. The Argos kind of like territorially, I guess, would make sense. But if the Argos spend money to promote in Barrie and no one comes, like it's a bit of a wasted effort. Mm-hmm. And the Argos barely promote in Toronto. So, and I'm sure that's going to change once the new ownership comes in next year. But yeah, I just, if you're not, like you said, if you're not sort of in the city that the team's in, it's probably very unlikely. And I can't really give an answer as to what anyone could do to make that different.
Yeah. It's the same way with like merchandise. You know, if you're not going to find much, you know, CFL jerseys in stores if it's outside of the city. So
well, you live outside of a CFL community. So, like, do you see CFL gear in stores in PEI or?
No, never.
Yeah, so
the only time I saw a Ticats hat at a gas station, well, that was like basically it. So that's like the only time, and I bought it like right away because I had to.
Yeah, to have it. It's like, oh my god, it's like.
I was shocked that I saw it, and I just had to buy it because I know no one else would. But okay. Yeah. So next question, it comes from at LWOS Steve. I think that's Last Word on Sports, Steve. What's the chances Trevor Harris lights the league on fire and keeps Ray on the bench even when he's healthy?
Well, we kind of touched on this when we discussed our East preview. I think minimal. I don't think Ray is only on the bench for as long as he's not healthy. And I don't think Trevor Harris is a bad quarterback, but Zach Caleros, he is not. So I don't really see Harris doing much. He's also kind of up against it. Like, they start on the road for 5 weeks. I can't remember when their first home game is, but it's not until August. So I know Caleros went on the road for a lot of those games a couple of years ago when he was in Toronto and won like 3 or 4 or something like that. And pulled games out of his butt, but I don't see Harris sort of lighting the league on fire and supplanting Ray as the starter anytime soon.
No, I give it like a less than 10% chance that happens. I mean, Ray's Ray. Whenever he's healthy, he's coming back. He's going to be the starter, no matter how good Trevor Harris plays. So, you know, Ray's not sitting on the bench when he's healthy. So there's basically a 0% chance that Harris overcomes Ray as the starter's position. So, you know, he might play well. I haven't seen enough of Trevor Harris to make, you know, assumptions on how good he is. So he may play well, but there's no way that he's overtaking Ray as a starter.
You said it best. Ray is Ray. And yeah. When healthy, the best quarterback in the CFL. He's replaced Anthony Calvillo as the elder statesman. And I know Henry Burris is older, but Ray's that solid, dependable rock player who, when he's on the field, he's just the best player on the field.
Yeah, for sure.
So Trevor Harris would have to be pretty darn good to make the Argos put Ricky Ray on the bench.
Yeah.
Like if Ray's still hurt, then obviously Harris is going to play. But yeah, I know. That's it, eh?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. So we've I guess we spent enough time making complete idiots out of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Lots of predictions. Lots of things that are probably going to come back to bite us in the butt later in the season. But you know what? The season is here. We're going weekly now. This is you're going to hear our voices every week, except I guess maybe except for bye weeks. Maybe we'll take a week off when the team doesn't play or something. But get used to hearing my voice and Mikey's voice in your ear holes.
Yep.
It's so fun. Yep. So you can obviously subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You can find it on the new home of CFL content, 3downnation.com. You can, if you want to get your questions read on the air, you can hit Mike up. Give him your Twitter handle, buddy.
It's Mike_Ticats.
And I am
underscore Ticats, apparently. Sorry.
Are you getting told in the background?
Yes.
Are you getting chirped on your own podcast by someone listening?
Pretty much.
I am at @JoshSmith_82 _ whatever Mike wants to call it is fine by me. So you can hit us up on Twitter and, I'm sorry, just you getting chirped. That's hilarious to me. So yeah, you can find us on Twitter at those addresses. And if you want your questions read on the air, if you just want to interact with us, what have you, we can be found there. So that's all for this week. For Podski Wee Wee, I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Eat 'em raw.